This is Radio Free Cybertron for July 5th, 2012. This week we have Transformers Rewind, Transmutate, which is from Beast Wars, of course, the TFormers.com news desk, and from Fanboy Versus, a lengthy discussion on the newest issue of Transformers More Than Meets the Eye.
This is Radio Free Cybertron, hosted by Brian Kilby, with J.D. Church, John DeLuna, XV, Amy Morgan, Peter Van, and Rob Clay. For the latest Transformers news, visit TFormers.com.
Hey, this is Radio Free Cybertron, and I am your host and friend, as always, Brian Kilby. Sorry for the live viewers this week. We're not having a live show. Wedding anniversary and all that. Decided to try something different, sort of old school, sort of RFC from the way we did things back in the day when it was basically me, a bunch of different people who I never saw or never met, ever. We all lived in different distant corners of the internet. I guess we kind of still do, but now we have this whole video Skype thing, and we don't have to, like, pass stuff back and forward. But, you know, we do it. So I decided that we just wanted to try this to see how it worked. It's a fallback, you know, just in case that we're not able to do a live show for whatever reason. This week, Peter is out, so it's actually JD and myself doing the TFormers.com news desk. Peter will never let me do this again. This is the TFormers.com news desk. I am not Peter Van, but this is JD.
Right.
I'm Brian Kilby. Peter Van is on vacation. First up in the news, I have no idea what Peter actually does here, so I'm just going to wing it. Once people found out that certain Transformers Prime Arms Micron weapon figures could combine with each other, a la the teams in Transformers Armada, many were curious how well the Combiner series would work. Well, a new in-depth gallery posted at the Mitari blog shows each of the Arms Micron's figures in detail, combined sword mode, and how it interacts with the mainline figures. Looks pretty cool. Here is how it looks. So, that actually is pretty cool looking. Here he is with
Megatron. Not bad. I mean, and of course, there's pictures of all their little animal forms, which is that a scorpion? I can't figure out what the one thing is.
Mm.
I know one's a bird.
Yeah, bird.
One's an alligator, and I can't tell what the other thing's supposed to be.
The bird is pretty well self-evident when you look at it.
Yeah.
And so does the alligator turn into a meat cleaver?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's kind of like a,
it's kind of like a cleaver. Little, it's not like a battle axe. It's literally like a freaking meat cleaver.
Well, that's the, well, the bird, yeah, the bird is like a long thing. I never really figured out what the alligator thing was supposed to turn into.
So these are what, going to be like $100 million for the
surely. No. I don't know how much they are. but no, I mean, yeah, they come on the sprues and stuff, though. I think these are ones that you still put together, which is kind of neat. Mm. I kind of want, like, a set of these, just because they do the whole put-it-together thing, so.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Also, in the news, Crossover Gen shows off the new look at the anime Trailer Force ATF-01. Do they know what ATF stands for? I guess not.
No.
So is he an ATF agent? Is that what he is?
Animated.
I'm joking. Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms.
Yeah, but, ATF agent. Yeah, I think they were trying to, fail
yes.
a little bit.
So after teasing their upcoming anime Trailer Force ATF-01 last week, Crossover Gen is providing a full look at their upcoming product that turns the Transformers animated Optimus Prime into a full-blown fire truck, because that's exactly what we want. New release date as of yet, but the figure is still in prototype, so who knows.
It sort of does the wing form thing.
I like the wing, the wing saber, or the, what was it?
Call that?
It was the, you know, last week when we talked about this on the show, I completely knew it. But now, since I'm all jacked up on caffeine, my brain isn't working. Sorry, Peter.
Nope. Yeah, but anyway, I mean, it looks pretty cool. So that'll be That'll be something I probably won't buy, but yet looks cool for those that would want it.
Yeah, if this were an official product, I would be much more tempted to buy it. But it's not. Pretty cool still. Pretty cool. So, also we have... Dun-dun-dun. That, you know, Transformers Fall of Cybertron Soundwave new screenshot with in-play, new in-play screenshot. This doesn't make sense. Weapons blazing. So Soundwave is known for being... Peter will never let me do this again. Soundwave is known for being unquestionably loyal to Megatron, commanding an armada of Minicon deployers. Soundwave can infiltrate and acquire enemy intel. Soundwave is often not trusted by other Decepticons out of fear he might also spy on them and report back to Megatron. So he's basically like Himmler. So
yes, that is... I'm sure that was the intention.
He is like the head of the Reichstag.
Right. Three people.
He wasn't head of the Reichstag. He was the Reichsführer or something. Yeah, sorry. But yeah, pretty cool. It looks, honestly, he looks great. I can't actually wait to play this. I won't finish it, but I will definitely play it.
I really want the toy more, but...
oh, God, yes. Know,
the game looks pretty good. I mean, it... yeah. If I had a gaming system still, I would try it.
Oh, I'm so sorry, JD.
Alas, I don't, so...
Yeah, that really, really sucks.
It's going to be okay. Anyway, no, it looks really good.
Up next, is your water killing you? Find out at 10 o'clock. Actually, fresh off Hegemon, which I still hate that name. It's Toy really World releasing their own hardhead, TW-HO. What's up with the code numbers? TW-HO1.
I guess it's a way to get around the copyright without having to come up with names that might be copyrighted.
Yeah. Looks like Toy World is looking to become a serious force in the third-party division of Transformers. After releasing Hegemon, teasing a new Optimus Prime TW-02, their first Throttlebot roll bar, TW-01, the company is setting their sights on a popular headmaster, Hardhead, who they've dubbed TW-HO1. So before, I remember people saying that they didn't know whether or not the head was going to transform. I don't see them doing this without it, and if you look at the 3D model, it almost certainly looks like it's going to.
Yeah,
it seems like seems like there'd be no reason to release this without the head transforming. In fact, if you look in the render of the tank mode, it looks like the head is in there, or the driver is in there. So,
yeah, and I mean, and if you look at the back shot of the head, you can clearly see the legs and arms. So,
yeah,
I mean, I guess my thing is like it doesn't really look like a massive improvement over the original figure. I mean, it may have a waist joint, and it may have elbows, and it may have knees, but it's not like it looks like amazingly different, you know, than the other figure.
Well, its primary feature is its advanced redundancy. So,
right.
Yeah. Not very.
Yeah.
Don't want that. I really don't. I'm sorry.
I think I'll pass. I feel okay with my original G1 hardhead.
Yeah. Don't need that. Don't need that. iGear's PPO5, which is the medical specialist, a.k.a. not Ratchet, and not Ironhide, are coming out soon. It looks like, I guess, they're coming this month. Honestly, they are pretty freaking awesome. I kind of hate myself for saying that, but I want
them. Yeah, they look good.
Yeah. Darn. Here is not Ratchet with not Scourge. Actually, no, I guess that is Scourge. Never mind. That's the Hinkay or the Classics Nemesis Prime, which I have. He looks... I never actually bothered transforming it. It's still in the box. The toys look really great. They're really solid. They look better than the, which is rare that they look better than an official product, but they look better than the classics, Ironhide and Ratchet that we got before. They were kind of crap. I never actually picked them up. I kind of regret that just because they are so hard to come by. But, you know, these aren't really too far off from the price of the Classics version if you wanted to pick those up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Classics version on the secondary market are like $60 sealed. This will be about $100.
Yeah.
Kind of stiff.
Hmm. And that Classics one's not great.
Yeah. But man, these are pretty spiffy. I may actually, once these are on clearance somewhere, like at TF Source or BBTS, I may have to pick those up.
Yes.
X-Transbot rolling out their own Not Power Optimus Prime homage. So, speaking of redundant, just in is what appears to be a sketch design of a new Project Power Optimus Prime homage from toy maker X-Transbot.
Is this different than the one that we already had, like, pictures of?
Yes. This one is a sketch. This one is a sketch. That's what this one is.
But we have... Wow.
Yeah, so...
Okay.
Here he is. It is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, okay, it's a sketch. Great. That's not a figure, you know?
Yeah.
Show me the figure, and then we'll talk.
The antennae really don't do anything for me.
They're very Japanese-y.
Yeah, don't care for that.
Japanese-ish.
Japanese-ish. Yeah. Okay, so now this is news that I thought was interesting. Takara Tomy to release Generation 1 6-shot in August. Takara Tomy will release the Transformers G1 6-shot. Kapow Toys has confirmed. This rumor first crept up in February and was basically up in the air until today. Posting on their Facebook page, Kapow reports that the figure will be an Asia market exclusive and will not be part of Encore. And it has premium packaging, which is rumored to have leather and chrome parts, WTF. Based on the wholesale price, Kapow says that it will be expensive.
So can you back up? Did you say leather?
Leather. Not pleather. Leather.
Why? What? What would be leather?
I don't know.
Maybe
it comes in a satchel.
Is it come like a holster? I mean, what? I can't even imagine what would be leather on that figure.
It's the packaging.
But still.
It could be a satchel.
Okay. I can't even... I don't know. Okay.
It sounds like a fanboy's wet dream, basically, is what it sounds like.
It would have been if they would have had a general release and we all could have, like, I don't know, bought one.
Well, I mean, there was a general release and it cost way more than the actual G1 toy does, which the G1 toy is not inexpensive by any stretch. And this one will certainly be even more. So if you want an inexpensive 6-shot, screw you.
Right, exactly. That's kind of my point.
We're more likely to get an inexpensive quick switch. Okay. And finally, Fans Project reveals Assaulter, the next war bot figure. So this is the, third of the series. He's an original design, sort of.
Yeah.
He's kind of like a big... he's way bigger than the previous two, which was Defender, and the other one's name escapes me. But this one's a big jet. It's kind of like a Valkyrie, maybe? I'm not really good with the Bandai stuff, but it's kind of reminiscent of that, sort of, maybe a little bit.
It almost makes me think of, like, they were going in a broadside direction and then changed their mind.
Yeah, changed their mind. That makes sense. Yeah, I can see that. I like... You know, there's something sort of Beast Wars, sort of like Machine Wars-esque era, or Beast Wars 2, sort of like the mini jet sort of look to the robot mode. Certainly it's much larger than that, but it kind of has that sort of design aesthetic to it. His back is, well, he has like butt kibble, as you can see there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, we were talking about on RFC on the third-party roundup last week that probably going legit, these people will probably stop making Transformers knockoffs and make original toys. And the smart ones probably will do that, and that's looks like what they're doing here. I mean, it's not close enough to anything to be, IP theft. And at this point, of course, anybody can make a transforming robot, so.
Yeah, I mean, you can make it transform, you know, into whatever without it being something like what they make. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's still kind of up in the air about how far they're going to go with it. But, you know, as far as, Hasbro going after their IP or whatever, I don't know. I'm not particularly drawn to this figure.
I want to see it colored before I make a statement one way or the other.
The wings are kind of weird, and it doesn't, I don't know.
Yeah, basically, if you look at the vehicle mode, it's sort of, to me, kind of like something somewhere between a Valkyrie to a Machine Wars sort of Beast Wars 2nd or Beast Machine style vehicle. If you mix those three things together and maybe throw in a little bit of Cybertron, you have kind of what they're going for. But it's, like, way out there.
It's so strange. It's really strange. I can't... There's things that feel wrong about it, and I just... I don't know that I can even articulate what I think is really wrong with it, so...
Yes. So, we cannot articulate what we think is wrong with that. That is a ringing endorsement. Keep it coming, guys. Keep it coming. For the TFormers.com news desk, for the last time, this is Brian Kilby.
And I'm J.D. Church.
Radio Free Cybertron will return after these messages.
It's an awesome new level of light and sound. With four new sounds and battle lights, there's Falcon, Psych-Out, and the evil Major Blood. Each sold separately.
Battle Beat Wood!
Fire!
Fire burn wood!
Battle Beat
Fire!
Water! Water put out fire!
Battle Beat
Water!
Wood!
Wood beats water!
Battle Beat! Collect every one of these incredible creatures to battle for fun!
Just activate their battle badges.
I got fire! I got water! Water beats fire!
Battle Beat! Can grow into an army!
Collect all 84!
Battle Beat!
Stan Bush here, and I dare you to check out Radio Free Cybertron.
But no force in the universe can contain the power and the fury of Rock Lord.
Shaking, quaking, crashing, breaking.
Rock Lord, powerful living rock.
He's sold separately, new from Tonka.
We now return to Radio Free Cybertron.
I'm back. Not used to saying that. Usually it's we're back, but I'm back. Next on the show, we have Transformers Rewind, which is one of our favorite new segments here on RFC. If you've actually never seen an episode or if you missed one, you can always go to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/user/TF Radio Network to see the previous episodes. We'll actually link to that in the show notes. I promise I really will this time. So far we've done Fighter Flea. We've done... goodness, what else? The Fish Test from, of course, Robots in Disguise, one of my favorite episodes ever. We've done Bad Spark, lots of other stuff, and we have lots more coming down the pike. So, so this week, Rob, XV, JD, and Amy talk about Transmutate, one of my favorite episodes.
Radio Free Cybertron.
Transformers.
Rewind.
This week on Transformers Rewind, we're watching Transmutate.
The royalty was right. It is useless.
I approve.
Rampage and Silverbolt engage in the battle of emotion and will over a mentally simple, structurally deformed robot newly emerged from one of the last functioning stasis pods.
They are your enemies. Join with me and destroy them.
He lies! Predacons will only use you! We extend the hand of friendship.
Silverbolt wants to befriend Transmutate and see her treated just as any other Maximal. The other Maximals are disturbed and concerned, however, and believe Transmutate should be placed back in long-term stasis for the safety of her and everyone around her. Rampage, meanwhile, feels Transmutate is a kindred spirit whose immense power he could manipulate to his own purposes.
Transmutate, do not speak. None shall hurt you now. Come with me. Come.
Hurt?
Yes, he is hurt. Badly. But I can help him. I must get him to the base to be repaired. And you too. Give him to me. I'll fly him to be repaired.
Fly? Fly!
Now, isn't that just prime?
Time to go back to the Matrix, hero!
Cheetor and I will take care of Rampage.
No. Let him be. For the moment, we are brothers.
This is kind of a heavy episode, don't you think?
Especially following up Code of Hero.
Yeah. Well, and then wasn't Code of Hero directly after Bad Spark?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, so
you got like week after week after week, although I think there was a break between Code of Hero and Transmutate, but I mean, you know, three episodes in a row, it was some pretty dark stuff they're throwing at you again and again.
Yeah.
That's something that Beast Wars seemed to do a lot in that season too. Something that they continue to hit on were these really deep and dark themes that, you know, and this one definitely is no exception to it, because it definitely did hit on some dark things that, I mean, not like incredibly dark, but just some, you know, some themes that were just, wow, this is a kid show.
Mm-hmm. Right. When we talked about Bad Spark before, one of the things we realized about that is this was first run syndication, which had a lot looser rules on it. You know, with first run syndication pretty much dead for kids' cartoons, it's a lot less common to find anything on this level anymore. A network has to be really confident in a show to try to push it this far and, you know, still keep their sponsors happy at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Beast Wars really had a great thing going on with how it was presented, because they could do things like Transmutate and Bad Spark and the gruesome death of one of the heroes.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, this is really complex stuff for a kid's show anyway, because, you know, it's a really heavy psychological component between Silverbolt and Rampage, just in the forces they're representing in the story.
Yeah, I mean, even Transmutate calls them friend dark and friend light or something like that, you know, friend good or something.
Yeah, yeah, friend good and dark, I think.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, it's hard for me to talk about this just in a really quick format, because it can be examined just so deeply. But, I mean, Rampage's whole motivation was because he feels like an outcast from all sides because of what the Maximals did to him a long time ago and how Megatron treats him now. He's a tool and weapon for him. And, you know, the opening scene of the episode where Rampage is trying to get the core of his spark back from Megatron just kind of goes to establish that again.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's kind of in a desperate place in which, you know, he doesn't really have an out. You know, Megatron's literally holding the cards for him. He doesn't feel like he belongs anywhere, and yet he has all of this. I think there's a very telling point at which he's sort of trying to egg Transmutate into, you know, killing Silverbolt, and he, you know, talks about channeling all of your rage and whatever into it. And I think you get a glimpse into Rampage in that way, because you kind of see where he's coming from, you know, personally on that level, that he does have all of this anger and frustration, and that he's, you know, venting it towards, you know, whatever it is he's being pointed at, or whatever it is in front of him.
One of the things that when I finally got around to watching Beast Wars that really, you know, impressed me immediately is that, yes, all the villains are far more complex than just about any other Transformers show I think I've ever watched.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, look at Megatron's base motivation. You know, his entire motivation is to reinsert the Predacon Empire, which to this point and at this point in Transformers history is basically just existing under the foot of maximal rule. You know, they are the social outcasts. And this group of Predacons that he puts together is really a ragtag group of, you know, Predacons.
Yeah,
and misfits and things that he puts together. So it's not this clear-cut story of good versus evil like we were used to in the sort of Decepticon-Autobot war that we saw, you know, out of the original series. It is much more complex. And I think that this episode typifies that complexity, because you see one of your characters that's typically considered to be a bad guy trying to befriend and find a common ground with this character, as well as Silverbolt, and not to be counted out, because again, Silverbolt is still trying to find his way in the Maximal world, because
right,
he had started out as a Predacon and was, I think in his own way, feels a little bit of an outcast, you know, from the group because of, like, the ethics that he holds and not being part of this group originally.
Yeah.
And Silverbolt is still relatively young, and that shows in the character development. You know, he's in a real naive place still, where he thinks that anybody can be given another chance to mm-hmm. find their goodness, which, you know, that comes back next season again, but
it comes back in a big way in Beast Machines. So, yeah, I mean, comes back in a huge way for him and Beast Machines. But
yeah, I mean, that ends up being a recurring theme for Silverbolt. But in this case, you know, the judgment is not there to see that, okay, this just cannot work this way.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what, Transmutate was not going to be long for that world, whether it was back in stasis or being destroyed.
Yeah.
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 Well, you talk about how these guys were, you know, like, they're all, you got Silverbolt, and they're, that both of these characters that are trying to get Transmutate to, you know, join their side are kind of in a, you know, they're in a precarious way. It's almost typified by the fact that Transmutate is also in that position as well, because both sides seem to reject Transmutate in certain ways, like, mm-hmm. you know, Megatron's like, it doesn't transform, get rid of it. And then, you know, the Maximals are like, well, you know, we should put it in stasis to protect itself, and because it's got so much power and it, you know, but it was just kind of like, it makes you sad.
Yeah.
Because I'm sad with this character. It's just like, aww.
It's really one of the things that makes this episode hard for me to watch, because except for Rampage and Silverbolt, both sides are really just objectifying Transmutate and not really addressing her as an individual.
Yeah.
Right.
Which, you know, simple as she is still a person by their standards.
Yeah.
Or should
yeah.
be considered a yeah. person by their standards.
Yeah.
And even Rampage, I think it's borderline, because he's seeing her the same way Megatron sees him, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, and some yeah.
She's a force to be unleashed, but one that would be at his control instead of Megatron's.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a certain element of that for sure. We ought to point out from a production point of view that Transmutate was voiced by Susan Bleu. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of
and
interesting.
That's why you get the Great Aunt RC reference in the
script. Too. Yeah. Who at this point was doing the voice directing for the series, but yeah. She jumps on.
America's number one superhero team explodes on the home video screen in their very first major motion picture blockbuster, G.I. Joe the Movie. Premiering exclusively on home video, this brand new multi-million dollar film extravaganza is a masterpiece in mind-blowing animation techniques that make this feature unlike any G.I. Joe you've ever seen. Along with all the regular G.I. Joe superhero favorites, this high-gloss spectacle introduces a whole new cast of kinetic characters that are sure to be a hit with kids across the country.
You have nothing to fear but Falcon himself.
Miami Vice super cop Don Johnson stars as the voice of Lieutenant Falcon, the playboy whose shenanigans land him in the slaughterhouse.
I've been expecting you.
Ruled by who else but that patriot of pain, the incredibly awesome Sergeant Slaughter.
You're going to war till you wish you were dead.
Then it's off to Cobra Land, where the terrifying Globulus, brilliantly voiced by Burgess Meredith, reveals his plan to destroy the minds of every human on Earth.
This invisible planet will be ours.
Now, right in their own homes, kids everywhere can see if G.I. Joe can still save the day in this high-budget, high-voltage film showcase of their all-time favorite superheroes.
And this is for the U.S. Army!
Fasten your seatbelt for the supercharged motion picture debut of G.I. Joe, the movie.
We're back. So, wrapping up the show this week, we are going to do something a little different. I was listening to Fanboy Versus from this past week, and they actually wrapped the show up with the newest issue, of More Than Meets the Eye from IDW, and it's such a great book. I'm an avid comic reader. I've been a comic fan for as many years as I've been alive, basically, and I have to say, I am thoroughly enjoying this book. It's one of my favorites. And the guys sort of talk about that on Fanboy Versus this week, and I thought that it was a good opportunity to sort of spread the word about that show a little bit. We have some cross promotional opportunities, as it were, and it's a really good discussion. So for those of you who don't watch Fanboy Versus, you can find that at fanboyversus.com. We actually have our own URL for that. Or it's at tfradio.net/fanboy-versus, I believe. But if you're at tfradio.net, it's actually on there on the left, right about there. So, yeah. But, yeah, so JD, Nicole, Chris, and Chris, McFeely and Triplett, talk about More Than Meets the Eyes, number 7, I think, this week. So let's go ahead and check that out.
You were okay. So we now have like 5 minutes to talk about More Than Meets the Eye.
Hey, this is awesome. All right, call it a day.
It is awesome. This book definitely pulls into I'll run through this as quickly as I can, I guess, while we talk about how awesome it is. This opens up with Rung sitting with Fort Max, who has been ordered to subject himself to psychoanalysis since he's, not stable.
Really, really glad, because you remember I was talking about how I wasn't sure, like, what I was supposed to think about that,
mm-hmm.
and how everybody was going, woo, yeah, isn't it awesome? And I'm like, yeah, but
you
objected when Optimus Prime capped that dude. And I'm like, I'm really glad to see that they didn't just have that be a thing that he did and then move on from there. So this had me from the first thing, and I was like, right, good, I like this, yeah.
It's also probably good if you've read Last Stand of the Wreckers. That ties in pretty heavily to this issue as well. So if you haven't read this, go read Last Stand of the Wreckers. If you haven't read Last Stand of the Records, what the hell is wrong with you? But
I think they do a pretty good job telling this story in a way that it stands on its own. Though.
Sure.
I mean, it does lead to a massive, essentially what is a massive narrative coincidence when you reach the final page.
Yeah.
But really then the Last Stand stuff is just there at the start to make that last page work without you having to read Last Stand.
But there's, I mean, there's the typical stuff I really like that's done in here. There's one scene where, you know, they have, Rung has Ultra Magnus laying on like a bed, you know, in front of him so that he's talking and relaxed. And he's asking him about what happened at Garrus 9. And you have a split panel where you have Overlord on one side torturing him and trying to get information out of him.
Did you say Ultra Magnus? You didn't see it.
No, I meant Fort Maximus. I'm sorry. Fort Maximus. Sorry.
I've caught everybody who's talked about this issue.
Yeah. So you've got Fort Maximus on a table. You've got Overlord on one side trying to extract information from him. You have Rung on the other side who's trying to ask him what happened. And just a beautiful sort of parallel of both concept and idea. And, you know, and the different things happening at those times. So really interesting on that. actual Ultra Magnus does find out about the bar in this thing and arrests poor Swerve. So there's a whole sequence that takes place in the bar, and you have several of the Autobots. In particular, Chrome Dome, who can recognize an Autobot by the sound of their transformation. As this he's doing as like a bar trick.
Robert does. This is the best stuff. Like all of these interactions like this. Just these guys hanging around just swapping stories and pulling out their party pieces.
Yeah. You know,
do a bar. This is a good place to come in.
Party tricks and stuff.
Trailbreaker was, I'm so cool, I've got guns in my legs.
Yeah,
you got guns in your legs, that's so awesome.
Yeah, it was totally that moment where that dude that you've been talking bad about walks in, and like you end up saying all the things that you just said were lame, like they're cool, because you don't know what else to say.
Great
thing,
like, that's a great funny moment in and of itself, but it's such a great way of actually doing something with Trailbreaker for the first time in 28 years.
Yeah.
Like, all Trailbreaker has ever been known for is if you need a force field, you get that bloke in. It's like any time in the cartoon when somebody would go, you, and Trailbreaker, and you go, this plot's going to require a force field at some stage. Yep. He's not bringing him along because he knows he needs a force field, but the writers decided to bring Trailbreaker along because there's going to be a colossal explosion or an island that needs shielding or something.
Yeah.
And it's the only reason Trailbreaker was in Spotlight Cup, for instance. So, like, Roberts is taking that and actually making it that Trailbreaker really resents the fact that all he's ever known for and all he's ever brought along for is for having a force field, and he gets a little drink in him, and he's like, he's resentful of the
this comic gets you to like characters that you never thought you would like, you know.
But The thrust of this issue takes place as basically a hostage situation, because after the whole sort of there's a mini exchange here with Trailbreaker, and then Ultra Magnus like shoots like five or six people in the bar.
Fortress Max.
I'm sorry.
Fort
Max. Oh God. All right. If I say Alt Mag, just you know what I meant.
I think you've got some unresolved issues with Ultra Magnus.
God. Maybe I should.
Why do you hate Ultra Magnus?
I don't know. But there's a great. Actually, I will talk about the Ultra Magnus deal because Tailgate shows up and they're asking if he's going over the unabridged version of the stuff, and there's a bit of a conversation there. And then all of a sudden, Tailgate perks up and he's like, wait a minute! There's an abridged version?
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Anyway.
I'm still campaigning for a Swerve Tailgate, you know, a little spotlight mini.
God, yes.
So want that.
So,
every issue of this is a spotlight.
Here's where the thrust of this issue takes place. Fort Max shoots these people in the face, then goes to Rung's office, holds Rung and Whirl, of all people, hostage. As he's in the middle of a flip-out, of which he sort of knows that he's in the middle of a flip-out, but he doesn't really know what to do about it.
So it's like, this is what he's trying to do about it, but he doesn't really know why. Meanwhile, you've got Rodimus, Ultra Magnus, Drift on the outside, and Blaster on the outside, trying to figure out not only what's going on in the room, but how they're going to, you know, settle the situation down.
Man, Whirl is so good in this.
Oh my god, he's amazing. Oh my god, yeah. He's totally like the reverse psychology in this, because you can tell he's scared shitless, and he is beat to fuck. He's been stabbed and punched in the face several times, and all he does is keep egging
all people just don't care.
He just keeps egging Formax on.
I don't think it's reverse psychology. Like, Whirl wants to die.
Maybe that's it, too.
No,
yeah,
I mean, it's pretty really messed up.
It immediately clicked with me as, like, remember back in the first issue when Whirl was going to burn down that shack of bodies? I don't think Whirl was going to leave that shack.
You think he was going to burn it down with him in it? Wow.
I think so. Because, I mean, he is just, you know, he's. You think maybe he's going for the reverse psychology at the start just to get in his head. But when Max has the friggin' barrel of the gun heating up at the end of the comic, it's like, do it, you cutter, do it, shoot me. Like, Whirl wants to die.
Yeah.
Do you blame him? Whirl's been through a hell of that.
Yeah, and he even tells a lot of his backstory in this as well.
Yeah.
What do you think about the little comment where he's like, so now you're going to tell me what I want to know? It says, well, you threatened a friend. That kind of surprised me.
Even Rung was like, what? There's a great part in here where they start getting audio. The Rodimus and the Autobots on the outside start getting audio, and they can't figure out from where. Well, and it was mentioned several issues back that Rung has a recording device built into his thumb.
Issue 2, wasn't it?
Yeah, which Fort Max finds and removes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not the most gentlest of ways.
Yeah, I love, and of course it happens off panel, which I'm fine with in this instance because you have plenty of text in which Rung's like, no, it's deep seated. No, you don't. Ooh, yeah. Meanwhile, back on the ranch, Ratchet and First Aid are trying to fix up the robots that got shot in the face. And this is another brilliant moment of letting pictures help tell the story. And that's what I love in comics. It's like, pretty panels are cool, but it's when you can use those panels to actually, like, give the audience the aha moment in which they're talking, and Ratchet's like, you know, everybody keeps saying random, but something's not sitting right with me, you know? It just seems weird, because these guys were standing near somebody else, and he didn't shoot them, but he did shoot this other guy. And he's like, you know, sometimes to figure it out, you just need to take a step back and look. And when they pans back, you see all four of them laying out, and you notice they're all the same color. And it's all that same blue as Overlord. And it's like,
yep.
Aw, shit. It's perfect.
It sucks the pipes.
Yeah. But, I don't want to go too far into it. Like I said, we get a lot of Whirl's backstory, and they devise a plan.
Just simply the great thing about Whirl's backstory is when you realize that Roberts has basically seeded the entirety of Whirl's story through everything he has written for IDW yet.
Yeah.
It's in Bullets, it's in Last Stand, it's in Chaos Theory, it's all in there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's a great movement, you know, through that as well, and interesting,
like,
for Whirl.
I shouldn't be amazed at this point, because, like, this book is consistently good, but every time an issue comes out, I'm so amazed that I'm reading a Transformers comic, and it's getting old saying this, but
amazing is that you look forward to reading a Transformers comic.
Yeah. But to move towards...
In some cases, I read this before I read anything else that I want to read.
I read this last.
I
am at the point where I need to move this to the end of my
stuff. I am reading it last.
Because I read this first this week, and then I had to read Thor.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is not... Oh,
no, I knew...
You know, I'm not saying that More Than Meets the Eye is necessarily the best thing I'm reading or the best comic on the stands. I'm a little uncomfortable saying that because as a rabid Transformers fan, I realize my perceptions of this book are warped, you know. But it's still a very good comic by any definition, whether or not it's... I mean, I'm not saying it's necessarily the best thing. Is it better than Journey into Mystery, Avengers Academy? I'm not sure. I'm not sure about these things. But all I know is that as a Transformers fan, my head is left they're swimming when I get to the end of an issue like this.
Yeah.
And then I have to pick up something like Thor. It's like Thor's fighting creatures that make your nightmares real for the fourth issue in a row. Yeah. And I'm like,
that's why you read Marvel Zombies.
I should go take a walk or something.
But I mean, it's just good stuff. So I'm gonna move real quick towards the end here, but like I said, I won't blow the end for anybody. Meanwhile, Swerve and Rewind have been put on rivet duty. Yeah. So they're on the outside of the ship, you know, tightening rivets basically. And you find out that, well, we know why Swerve is there. But you find out that, and this may have been revealed too, or some bit of it anyway.
No, this was pretty much.
Is this new? Because I thought that there was at least some bit where, like,
they,
Red
they
Alert.
They mentioned the data disks at one point, but not what was on them.
Not what was on them, correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Was it the first issue he had the disks?
Yeah, he bought the disks in the first issue. Red Alert said he fought them in the last issue.
We find out that Rewind, even though he tries to protest otherwise, apparently into snuff videos.
Nah, see, I don't believe he's protesting. Or, he says he doesn't watch them for pleasure or professionally. Something's going on there. He's not watching them for fun.
Yeah, it's just a little odd. It's kind of an odd
like
thing.
He's a historian, and he's having to, you know, take the good and the bad.
Yeah, but that would be professional capacity as well.
Right.
Like, there's something more to it than that, you know?
I don't know if it's like sparks exiting or something. I don't know. There's something else.
All
sorts
from the sounds of it.
But
there's a story there. That's the great thing about it. There's something.
One of the next things we hear about, I think.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Rodimus has, since they're on the outside of the ship, he wants them to go to the window at Rung's office and use their rivet gun like a laser to shoot Fort Max. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
Fort Max calls Rodimus Hot Rod, and he doesn't like it.
Oh, man, he does, too.
Oh, that was
and there's a great
awesome.
Part
I
in here.
Because
what Fort Max wants is he wants Rodimus to turn the ship around and head back to Cybertron. And there's a great another world great line in there where he's like, where Fort Max gives him his demands, and he's like, oh, you screwed up, man. Because Rodimus, he's always going to do whatever you don't want him to. If you would have told him, don't go to Cybertron, whatever, then maybe he would have turned around. But now you told him to go there, he's definitely not going to do that. But, there's a bit of a shocking sort of event there that I won't mention. I don't want to spoil for you. But I will say that the end of this references back to something that I had mentioned and was not completely put down, but, you know. We end with Red Alert. There's a bit of an epilogue to this story. And a mention of where the heck is Red Alert. And Red Alert mentioned several issues ago that he kept hearing these voices coming from what should be below the ship completely. And so he pulls the drill off of one of the dead... What were those called that are stuck
Duobots.
In the Duobots? The drill off
Duobots?
Of one of them.
Was that Or?
Or.
And uses it to drill a hole in the floor and actually peeks through into what looks like a holding area below the ship.
I did not see that coming.
No,
well,
I mean, I thought
there were two things I didn't see coming. Basically,
well,
that
I didn't see
that.
That
we're not gonna talk
now we
about.
Mentioned several issues ago, and I'll go ahead and talk about this part of it, where he had the actual recording, and the recording was saying "me kill, me kill, me kill," and I suggested, that it might be the other way around. It might be "kill me, kill me."
It's almost a triple bluff, because it's like you look at it and you think, well, that's saying "kill me." Obviously, that's somebody under there. And then you think, oh wait, no, hang on, because we know Grimlock's coming up in this comic later, so it might actually be the way it appears. Meek, it might be a double bluff. You know, you think it's supposed to. You think that it's supposed to be read the opposite way, but it's really supposed to be written the way that it is written, so it's a double bluff. But it's actually a triple bluff, because it is the first thing you did it for.
Right.
But it's not good.
Yeah. And what it is wow. I mean, that's the other thing that we're not going to mention here, but...
you can't.
I had to go back through the comic, actually, and kind of... I was like, did I miss something when I saw that? I had to go back and look, and that's like, oh, okay.
Nope. That,
All right.
I do want to go back. What I really want to do is have a note card on my desk or a list on a, because I need the list of the prophecy things from the first issue. That's like, don't go here, don't look at this, don't talk to these people.
Well, one of them is don't look in the basement.
Well, there you go.
There's one of them. Yeah.
Well, maybe, but back in the first couple of pages, Overlord talks about something hidden beneath Aequitas, which is already down in the bottom levels of Garrus 9. Is that the basement, you know?
Oh, and like it was torturing Fort Max,
yeah. So there's another potential basement, and the other one is don't look in the coffin, and, you know, we got somebody who could go in a coffin now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, it's like
this
one of the.
This is so good. I love this comic.
This is really just good one stuff.
Another one of the ones was don't go to Delphi, and it's like, well, they were at Delphi already, and it all turned out okay, really. Oh, and then Fortress Maximus went crazy, started killing a bunch of people. That turned out pretty bad. Is that why they shouldn't have gone to Delphi, or is it the fact that the Decepticon Justice Division operate within Delphi territory, and we know they're turning up next issue, and what's going to come off the back of that?
We think
the Decepticon Justice Division are coming for Drift because they've been made aware of the Lost Light because of their trip to Delphi. But then the end of this issue comes along, and it's like, well, they'd probably want that more than they would want Drift, and it's like...
I don't know, but it's awesome. That's all I know.
I know.
It is so good. So, definitely, if you have been on the fence...
Buy this comic.
And saying, I have read Transformers comics before, and I didn't like them, this is not those. This is actually good stuff. So.
Now, didn't a trade come out with the first, was it five issues or four issues already?
It's the death of Optimus Prime and the first three issues, the Liars A to D storyline.
Okay, I was going to say, if the trade came out, buy the trade and get this one, but no, it doesn't have all of them. Just buy the trade and get the
issues.
Four
and five as well, yeah.
So check it out, More Than Meets the Eye. This was issue six. So, I mean, you can't jump on here. You got to go get the other issues. I mean, you really need to read it all because there's a lot of stuff that's being, seeded and planted through. But you will thank us so much that you did that. You will come back. You will send us emails and tweets, and you'll be like, "Oh my God, Fanboy Versus was totally right. This is amazing."
The thing is, a lot of my friends won't read this because they don't like Transformers. I'm like, if you just like a good story, just read it. You don't need to be a Transformers fan.
Yeah,
that is really one of the best things. Like, just like as More Than Meets the Eye number one, it's easy to overlook Transformers fans, but the way More Than Meets the Eye number one is written is really, it really highlights how the fact that there are loads of these guys. And it's not just 1984 and 1985. There are loads of these guys. And no, everybody doesn't know everybody else. So More Than Meets the Eye number one is about people who don't know each other, meeting for the first time and coming together. And they're all, they're introduced to each other as they are introduced to the reader. And even if you don't know your Transformers, you really can start with More Than Meets the Eye number one.
And you know, the page in the back is great for new readers. Meet the crew.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And you get that every issue. You can find out who the characters are. I mean, even if you haven't read the issues before, which I wouldn't recommend, read them first, you've still got kind of like, okay, this is who your characters are.
Yeah.
And that's kind of cool. I mean, most comics don't do that. That's really neat.
Remember when Marvel used to have those fold-out covers and they would have that in there?
Yep.
And then they would have to pay somebody to actually do that, and then now they just have those terribly written little previously on pages that the editor copy-pastes together from the same paragraphs that are shared amongst all the other event books that are happening, unless you're Journey into Mystery.
Right.
Yeah. Which those are awesome.
Recap pages. Like, recap pages, they're almost like unilaterally terrible, except for Journey into Mystery. Like,
yeah.
Deadpool I can't think of the word I want to use, introduced those way back in the late 90s. And everyone was like, damn, those be awesome. And then it was off the back of that, really, that they added those fold-out covers with the previous Leons.
Mm-hmm.
And they were good. And then basically, like, all I can assume is they got greedy and they kept the fold-out covers. But then there would be a double-page ad inside the fold-out cover, and the previously on would just be included on the single page of the facing sheet when you opened the comic. And then they got rid of it entirely.
Bastards.
Yeah. Just to digress for a moment.
So there you go. That's our show. Quick reminder again. July 14th. San Diego Comic-Con's coming up. And don't forget to you know, if you got someone going, oh my gosh, there's some decent Transformers and G.I. Joe swag there as well.
And I don't know about My Little Pony.
And I don't know about the My Little Pony stuff, but I know this is going to be derpy. There you go.
We have derpy.
I did see that.
This is going to be your only, or one of the least, your only shots to get the Cliffjumper Terracon in the first edition mold in really awesome packaging.
I would love to have that. I would this love is
also,
to have that.
Yeah, and this is also going to be your first chance to get the Bruticus in the G1, or in the game colors, I think, isn't it?
I may have made a mistake, actually. I already pre-ordered it, except for I'm getting the G2-ish looking colored one, which I think looks pretty awesome, actually. So sure. I'm happy with that.
So that's going to be $100, you know, for the Bruticus. So plus there's the G.I. Joe crossover-ish Transformers tank thing, because apparently they figured out the way to sell G.I. Joe is to put Transformers on it.
Yeah.
I like G.I. Joe anyway.
Oh. So
so that's Radio Free Cybertron for this week. We will be back next week. We will have a live show. We promise, Diecast. I'm sorry. Seriously. So hopefully normal time. You know, unless the real world creeps in, maybe not. You know, last week when we did the show, I was like 2.5 hours late. Ugh. Work. It's busy. So for the guys, I'm Brian Kilby. We will see you next week.
This has been Radio Free Cybertron. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Watch our live stream at tfradio.net/live. Join our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/tfradio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, TF Radio Network. Have a question or comment? Leave it on our Facebook fan page or mail it to contact@tfradio.net. Copyright 2012 TF Radio Network.